Welcome back. Jupiter and Saturn will align in the night sky on December 21st. We talked about this last night in an event astronomers call the Great Conjunction, also referred to as the Christmas Star, making the planet's closest encounter in nearly 400 years. When Saturn and Jupiter converge on December 21, the two planets may appear as a bright point of light that will be easily visible in the night sky. The two planets have slowly been moving closer to each other over the past few weeks. A conjunction occurs when planets appear incredibly close to one another in the sky because they line up with Earth in their respective orbits. This year's Great Conjunction also marks the first time in nearly 800 years since the planets aligned at night, and sky watchers were able to witness the event in 1623. The conjunction wasn't visible to sky watchers on much of the Earth because of its location in the night sky. So the last time the event was visible was way back in 1226. Be sure to be tuning in to Coast AM tonight. That's Sunday night into Monday morning. And George Knapp will be speaking with Luis Elizondo, the former director of the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, ATIP. That was the secretive Pentagon unit that studied UFOs, and he'll join George Knapp for an update from the To the Stars Academy about recent UFO news, including an unclassified image that's reportedly being circulated among U.S. intelligence agencies. And then in the second half, Mr. Knapp will speak with international paranormal researcher Paul Stonehill, who discusses his quest to locate a mystical land known as the Russian Shambhala. It's said to be in Siberia or beyond and could be the true Atlantis. That's Sunday night, tonight into Monday morning. George Knapp in the air chair at Coast to Coast AM. Your telephone calls for Preston Dennett and your UFO encounters when Coast to Coast AM continues. Longtime chronicler of high strangeness, author Preston Dennett is here, and we are talking about, well, his latest book is UFOs at the Drive-In. And as you, did you try plotting all of these sightings on, in fact, I think there is a picture in the book, come to think of it. You've plotted the sightings on a map of the United States. And are there clusters? Are there any patterns that stand out in terms of the sightings?
Yeah, I found a map of, you know, all the drive-in theaters across the United States and plotted all the actual encounters that I could find, and they do seem to correspond pretty much exactly. But most theaters are hit only once or targeted only once, and like I said, it's sort of as if the ETs are doing a book tour or a concert tour and just hitting one theater after another. Sometimes there are repeats. There was a theater up in Canada, actually, that had encounters so often, people were seeing UFOs there, that the owners started advertising in their little leaflets saying, you want to see a UFO, come to the drive-in. So there are some cases where they do seem to sort of target one theater, but generally, no, it's just one after another, and then they move on.
You've spent some time at the drive-in. Have you ever seen a UFO at the drive-in?
I haven't. No, I sure haven't. I was pretty, you know, let's say I was still a teenager when I kind of stopped going. But, you know, I want to go back. I really enjoyed it. And now that I know this is a thing, I'm kind of curious about it because, you know, since the book was published, I've gotten a number of other cases. This always happens. And people are like, yeah, this actually happened to me. I'm like, wow, you know, I kind of knew it. This is a thing. And I'm sure there will be more cases, for sure.
All right, let's dive into the calls and see what we get. It looks like we actually have some people that were at some of the drive-in theaters on those particular nights when there was an encounter. Let's say hi to Samuel, who is in Hutchinson, Kansas. Samuel, welcome to Coast. How are you?
Hi, Richard. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
I have a few things to ask your guest. First of all, where did he get his information on the sighting in Hutchinson, Kansas in 1966?
I was able to talk to a first-hand witness by the name of Pat Mitchell, and he was there with his friend.
Okay, I don't know him. I was there with my uncle, which was a Reno County Sheriff's Officer. Reno County is an Hutchinson. It didn't go to the south. It went to the west. And then it circled around. And I believe that there are probably UFOs. This was no UFO. This was a B-52 bomber out of McConnell Air Force Base in Wichita. And that was, this story has been, I was 11 years old, and I was in my uncle's car with five other witnesses, a 63 Chevy Impala. And that is just totally untrue, that it was, that there were multiple, or there were many cars. There were like five cars that went out to look at this thing.
Well, I have to tell you, this might be a different incident, because this witness that I talked to described this object actually staying right next to the drive-in theater screen itself and being totally silent and saucer-shaped. So it's not quite matching the details, but, you know, not to contradict you, but it just doesn't sound to me like it's the same incident.
It's possible, Samuel, you were there on another night in 1966, same drive-in theater, but you saw something else on that night. You saw a B-52. Is that possible?
No. They made a big hubdo about this. And the Haven Press, Haven is south of Hutchinson, and they made a big to-do out of this, and it was nothing to do about anything. And I think that... this man should do more research than have one person that he probably doesn't even know come out and say this stuff, because I believe that there are true incidents. This was not by any means a UFO.
All right, Samuel, thank you for that. Well, you've got a conflicting report here. Now, in this case, Preston, was it just the one individual you interviewed, and how old was he at the time?
He estimates he was 18, 19 years old. He's not sure of the exact date, but around that time. And most of these cases do rest on the testimony of one or two people, a family. There are a few that do have independent corroboration, but I have to tell you, most do not. I think the real evidence lies in the fact that there are so many cases that follow a very set pattern. And, I mean, we know for sure. I did find documentation on some of these cases, which were rooted through Blue Book. So it's not just pure, you know, I guess, unsubstantiated reports. Some are definitely.
Right. Well, you know, it could be that in this case, the mystery has been solved. Maybe in this case, it was a B-52. Maybe not. Hard to say. Let's say hi to Dave in New York. Dave, welcome to Coast.
Morning, Richard and Preston. I want to cheer this little conversation up after that last call, okay? You know, let's remember, now they had a double feature up in Canada where they came back twice. Just remember what Ian Punnett says. Eat the Canadians first. Now,
that's it. We're tasty.
Back in 1965, and I believe it was on December 10th, and it was dusky, or at least in the evening, you know, because my friends and a lot of kids at school saw this too, but they weren't in school when they saw it. But it flew from north to south. It was actually turned out to be a bell-shaped. Now, it must have been a Yugo to the space industry back then, because it was bell-shaped like a bell. And it ended up crashing in, I think, Kirksburg, Pennsylvania, and, you know, smoking and whatnot. And, you know, people showed up there, but the military showed up and told them to get lost. So, you know, left. But I remember back in the old days when they first started seeing them, they'd leave like three marks on the ground from their tripod landing gear or whatever, and they would burn it. And it would actually burn asphalt when they flew over the asphalt, and people's cars would shut off. I mean, it is, and that's before the, all this modern technology, you know, with all the computer stuff now, they'd probably burn him right up. But does any of this stuff ring a bell?
Oh, Kecksburg is a very famous UFO sighting, Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. And you're right. I mean, the witnesses described it as it looked like a bell.
Yeah.
Some say that it was some sort of a meteor burning up, I think. That was the official story. Have you covered that, the Kecksburg case at all, Preston?
Not in terms of personal first-hand research. I've certainly followed it. I do believe it's probably one of the better substantiated, what we would call crash retrieval cases. It's not just Roswell. Kecksburg is another one of these incidents, which does have the support of a number of witnesses. But whether it's a Russian satellite or a meteor or an actual UFO, there's still some controversy about that.
All right, let's say hi to Mike in Connecticut on the wild card line. Mike, welcome to Coast.
Hey, thank you. I'm going to have a word with Ian Punt. He's got to stop saying that. He's the Canadians first. I don't like that. Very nice people up in Canada, the best. All right,
I appreciate it, Mike.
Are you familiar with the case? Had to be, I'm going to guess, 5 years ago, an object flew directly from the South Pole to the North Pole. The contrail was observed by the ISS, the International Space Station. Would you be able to calculate the speed? It took it 30 minutes. What would the speed be for the duration from south to north? 30 minutes. They say a contrail lasted 30 minutes. What would the speed be?
Yeah, well, that should be easy enough to figure out. It's just got to get the circumference of, or half the circumference of the Earth. Going from, you know, the North Pole to the South Pole, and factor in the speed. And,
it's about
the miles per hour for sure.
Well, it's about 12,500 miles from the North Pole to the South Pole, and they did that in a half an hour.
And it made a contrail like a half a mile wide. It was observed in South America.
That's interesting. Why would a UFO make a contrail?
I don't know.
It would.
There are cases where they do.
I'm just curious
rare,
what the speed was.
Right. Well, if it did 12,400 miles in a half an hour, so what do you do? Do you double that? Then it's would that be 24,000 miles per hour? I guess it would be. About, almost 25,000 miles per hour. If it did the jaunt from the North Pole to the South Pole, which is 12,440 miles, if it did that in a half an hour, you'd double it. So you're looking at roughly 25,000 miles per hour, which is Mach 4, right? That's Mach 4, isn't it? No, it's more than that. The speed of sound is 600. So it would be, would that be Mach 40?
Don't ask me to do math on the air.
okay. Anyway, thank you for the call, Mike. I appreciate it. Bruce is in Saskatoon, Canada. Hey, Bruce, welcome.
Hi, Richard. Good to talk to you again. I'd like to talk
likewise
to you again, ask him on some of the things in regards to documentation. We've had a lot of weird things in the sky during this COVID year. And the one thing we haven't had is contrails or planes or anything else until things started to change in the middle of summer. Well, I had an incident in April where on Saturday at 3:30 in the morning, I was awoken by dogs in the inner city where I live, barking. And I just happened to look out, and all of a sudden the dogs stopped barking, and two objects came in from the southern sky over our city. Very bright, perpendicular to each other. As they came across, the one object closest to myself from in the western side went over to the eastern side object and then veered sharply away. And then they virtually almost stopped over the city. Probably, I'm going to say, anywhere from 20 to maybe 25,000 feet up above or less. And then all of a sudden, both objects rocketed away from the inner city in a northeast direction. I'd never seen anything move that fast. They were cylindrical, glowing. They looked to me like maybe they were ramjet drones, U.S. drones. But what's really interesting, and this is the thing, I'm not a guy to think about disclosure. I'm a guy to turn around and think about documentation. And in a lot of cases, within an hour, there was military aircraft in the area. Not talking helicopters, not talking jets. The closest Air Force base would be Cold Lake, Alberta. The other one would be Minot in North Dakota. Within an hour, there's military aircraft in the area. The next day, I was so amazed at what I'd actually seen. Not a sound, not anything. You could hear the aircraft. We live on the flight path of the Stratofortresses when they come out of Omaha, when they come out of Minot to go north to Diego Garcia and everything else. You can hear them even before you can see them in the sky. Very loud. And especially when it's cold and in wintertime. But the objects that came afterwards, heavy-duty military aircraft, on Sunday morning, approximately between 3 and 3:30 in the morning, there was KC-10s, there was AWACS, there was everything. And I'd like to ask your guest, what happens, like, in terms of some of the documentation after the incidents? What do people see?
Yeah, that's what you're talking about is not at all unusual. It's often just military jets of various types, but depending on the incident, there's a lot of USO activity off the Southern California coast here. There's been a number of incidents where Navy ships have shown up following encounters and this sort of thing. I think, in some cases our military is doing the best to track it, and because they're themselves, you know, I've talked to some military witnesses firsthand, are mystified at what they're seeing. So this is definitely another level of complication to this whole UFO phenomena.
All right, Bruce, thank you for the call. Let's go to the first-time caller line, and Barry is in Lincoln, Nebraska. Barry, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Good morning, guys. Good talking to you. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a first-time caller, as you said. Richard, I've got a story that I'd like to tell Preston about. I'm 65, and in 63, 4, or 5, approximately there, in Lincoln, Nebraska, my parents, almost on a weekly basis, would go to a drive-through theater. And on one occasion, it was my parents and then me and my younger brother went to a movie. And as Preston mentioned, a lot of the drive-in theaters had playgrounds in the front of the screens. And so me and my little brother went down and played in the playgrounds. And we were sitting on a swing set watching the movie, and it was a set of three swings, and I was in the middle, and my little brother was on one side, and then to the other side was a young gal that we didn't know. She was just a stranger, and we were watching the movie, and suddenly she said, "Oh, look up, what's that?" And I looked up, and above us was a formation of 6 to 8 fairly triangular-shaped objects, longer on the pointed side and shorter at the back, and they were moving back and forth, not rapidly, but kind of slowly. It was real hard to tell the distance above us they were. And
Barry, I'm going to get you to hold on. Just stay put, Barry. I'm going to hold you on because we're heading into a break here. And we'll get back to your UFO sighting at a drive-in back in 64. Here's Otis and Cigarettes and Coffee on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. And we have Barry hanging on in Lincoln, Nebraska. We'll get to his call in just a few moments as he describes his encounter with a UFO at a drive-in movie theater back in the mid-1960s. Preston Dennett, our guest in the second half of Coast Tonight, the author of UFOs at the Drive-In. All right, back to more of your calls when Coast to Coast continues. Stay with us. Barry in Lincoln, Nebraska, are you still on the line?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can. So you were in a drive-in playground. If I can get you to turn your radio off, Barry, thank you. So you were at this drive-in playground in 1964, 65. And just continue on with that story. Was that in Lincoln at the time, Lincoln, Nebraska?
Lincoln, Nebraska, and this is in summer because my parents never took us out to a drive-through in the cold weather, of course. So we're sitting down at the swings. I'm with my little brother, and on one side and on the other side, a strange girl that I didn't know. She says, oh, look up, what's that? I look up and see a formation of 6 to 8 triangular shape, oddly triangular shape, objects slowly moving back and forth. They didn't have any lights on them. I couldn't see any features. It looks like they were reflecting light off of the drive-through theater. And so I look up and I look down at my little brother and say, Raymond, I said, look up. And just as I said that, the gal next to me says, oh, and I looked up and they're gone. And I said, where'd they go? She said, they just shot that way. And I said, and that was, she pointed to the west. The theater we were at was sort of on the east side of town, and it was called the Skyview Theater. It's gone. And so I've never reported this. And so I ran up to my parents' car and said, Mom, Dad, I just saw some UFOs. And, of course, they scoffed because I'm 8, 9, or 10. And am I still on?
Yes, you are. Yes, we're listening, okay. Barry.
And so I can't remember the movie, but I certainly remember that event. I never reported it, and it was so exciting. I didn't think it was very common thing at all. I said, well, it doesn't sound like anyone's ever done this. So I was stunned to hear Preston's collection of experiences, and I had to call and just mention this. So at the time, Lincoln had a small Air Force base, but it was not military. I never heard anyone else mention anything about this. And now, as Preston said, a lot of the times the UFOs look like they're doing it to get attention. Well, it was almost like when the UFOs noticed that the two of us were seeing them, they shot away like they were actually shy. So that's my story. It's the first time I've ever told it.
Wow. Well, that's terrific. Now, Barry, would you be interested maybe at some point contacting Preston to tell him more about this story? Or?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Would you be?
I would like to.
Okay.
Like
so what I'm going to do, Barry, is
draw a picture of the formation and the approximate shape of those, and because I remember that clear as day.
Well, what I'll get you to do, and Donna Walker back in the studio in L.A., if you could maybe put Barry on hold and then take down his contact info and pass that on to me, and then I'll pass it on to Preston. I'm who knows, Preston, maybe there's a second volume of at UFOs in the drive-in. What do you think?
I'm telling you, there might be, because I'm continuing to get cases. And, that case sounds like a good one. Again, we see them sort of approaching the theater, and that's when they do some sort of maneuver. Sometimes it's just one or two, like zipping at a right angle and racing away. But sometimes it's much more dramatic than that. And I do think that they are aware that they're being observed, at the very least.
All right. So, Barry, we'll put you on hold, and Donna will take your number and or email even, and she'll pass it on to me, and it'll be like a water bucket brigade here, and I'll pass it on to Preston. All right, let's say hi to Frank in Hollywood, Maryland on the wild card line. Frank, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Howdy, Richard. Glad to be back with you. I want to relate my drive-in memory. Down here in southern Maryland, during the Jim Crow, we everything was segregated, including the swimming pool, which our taxes helped pay for, but we couldn't swim in it. The drive-in was the meeting place. It closed because the beer was warm and the hot dogs were cold and the french fries were cold. And the mosquito problem, they couldn't solve it, so they ended up closing. But this is right next to Patuxent Naval Air Station, where they trained the Navy pilots, which you probably have heard of. Two or three presidents had visited the base. in my UFO experience, I saw this craft, two or three, well, I don't know if it was a craft or not, but two or three of the Coast to Coast callers called in and said it was a triangle-shaped object, but they could see the edges of it, that it was a craft. It was all black and blended in with the stars. Now, I saw it. There was a slight hum from it, but I don't know how far it was in the air. My thinking was about 2 football fields long, and it had, but the next time I saw it, one of the lights, I thought it was stars at first, but one of the lights were out. What they did was, they made a mistake in making it a perfect triangle, the lights surrounding the craft. They made it too perfect of a triangle. So, but I'm just saying about that because other callers have described the same thing, Coast to Coast listeners. So that's my experience, and I'll never forget the drive-in experience. Sometimes the kids would meet there and put extra people in the trunk because it was only about $5 a carload, I think. They charged by carload, not by per person.
That's right. That's right. Yes, I did the same thing. Snuck in the trunk in the back of my friend's 1970 satellite. I don't know who made that car. Was that a Ford? Anyway, it had an immense trunk. I mean, you could put the entire Little League baseball team in the trunk. It was so large, and we smuggled a few into the Breeze's drive-in in Brantford back in the early 1980s. Frank, thanks so much for your call. Did you want to respond to that, Preston? These, what do you think of these black triangles? Some of them so huge they block out the night sky.
Yeah. I know there are some researchers who feel that these are primarily secret military craft, and I think probably some of them are. I doubt all of them are, particularly the ones that are sort of hovering over drive-in theaters and showing themselves off. That's not something the military would or should do. Very hard to say, of course. What we see, again, mostly in these drive-in theater cases is your classic flying saucer, but again, there are other shapes. Triangle does come up in a few cases.
Let me ask you about the number of UFO sightings since COVID. I would presume, maybe rightly or wrongly, that the sightings have gone down simply because people have been kind of locked in, not locked in, but they're in their houses, staying put, not out and about. What are the numbers? Do you know since, or for 2020, since COVID struck?
I haven't done a statistical analysis to see if it's gone up, but it's my understanding that, yeah, there has been a spike of sightings. So that is kind of interesting. I think it might be because people...
It's the exact opposite of what I thought. Yeah, it's gone up. That's interesting.
I think people might have more
time. All right.
Perhaps, right.
All right, let's go to the wild card line again. And Pete is in Charlotte, North Carolina. Good morning, Pete. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hey, great show, guys. I want to try to make this short, an arbitrary abduction story. You know, we got these little state fairs that come out here. And they called me up to work on one of the generators, you know, that was feeding the lights and the rides and the stage shows and all that stuff. So I go out there. It's about 9:30 at night. There's a weird-shaped trailer out there, which I thought was the generator, right? I walk in there, and I get in the thing, and all of a sudden, I guess you call him a gray or something, pops out of the thing and barks at me, you know. Real gruff voice. I mean, he sounded like Wolfman Jack with laryngitis. And he says, you know, what are you doing in here? And I said, I come to work on a generator, and about 6 other of these things pop out and everything. Now, keep in mind, I was a lot younger back then. I thought these guys were, like, in costume for one of the stage shows or something. And he says to me, you know who we are, huh? So jokingly, I said to him, yeah, I saw you guys on The Outer Limits, and I actually laughed at that, you know. And he says, "Do we know you?" I says, "No, not really." And he says, "You got the calmest demeanor of anybody that's ever been in here before." Now, I want you to keep in mind, I said I was a lot younger. I don't want you to think I would do anything illegal. But I says to the guy, I says, "Well, this is how I keep my composure." So I pulled the joint out of my pocket and handed it to him, with bony fingers taking it. And what was, I guess, supposed to be his nose, he starts smelling the aroma like you would a good Havana cigar, you know. And he pulls something out of his pocket and he says, "Here, try one of ours." And so I lit it up. I tell you, it was the crappiest Martian herb I ever had. I said, "Light mine up." And so they did, right? And I'll tell you, I had them rolling on the floor laughing in about 5 minutes. I was telling them jokes. I was doing imitations. He says, "Do Elvis, do Dangerfield for us, you know." And then, well, they had some kind of a smooth suspension system in this thing, because I'm looking out the window and we're airborne, you know. And I recognized we're going over Grandfather Mountain or something. And I said to him, "We're flying in this thing." And he says, "Yeah." I says, "Can I drive?" So he said, "You know how?" And I said, "Yeah." Well, they didn't have very good linkage in the thing. I turned the thing, and I think I took a piece out of the mountain. Six hands yanked me out of this seat, you know. And they start cussing me out, I guess, in Martian. I don't know what he said, but judging by the tone of his voice, it was something like, "Oh, this jerk just cost me an arm and a leg in a body shop," you know. And about a minute later, they kicked me out of the thing, and I ended up out in the... was the bay in Long Island somewhere, and I had to make my way back to North Carolina from there. But it was just a strange experience. I thought you might get a kick out of hearing it. Anyway, appreciate it.
Indeed,
the
Pete,
show.
And you told it well. Thank you. Thank you so much. And they spoke English. Now, let me ask you, Preston, in your experience and your research, do Grays speak English?
Often they do. What's really interesting is they speak whatever language of the person they're contacting. Often what people hear is, you know, don't be afraid, we won't hurt you. A guy I interviewed, he's from the Netherlands, and they spoke in his native language and said the same thing. Talk to people who, you know, have Spanish as their first language, and the ETs will speak Spanish. So, yeah, generally they choose the language of the person's, you know, primary tongue, I guess. But often it's telepathic and not necessarily even words. It's sort of an impression.
Well, and speaking of impressions, they asked Pete to do Rodney Dangerfield. So that's impressive that they would be familiar with the work of Rodney Dangerfield. All right. Let's say hi to Ryan is in upstate New York. Hey, Ryan, welcome to Coast. Do we have Ryan on the wildcard line? Are you there, Ryan? Ryan, going once, going twice. We lost Ryan. Okay. Jack is in Ohio, first-time caller. Hey, Jack, welcome to Coast.
Hello, how are you this evening?
We're all right. We're just recovering from Pete's call.
I had an experience one night flying air freight for a small charter operator, and had a load of floor mats, and as the night, and there's quite a bit of wind out of the west, and I was heading west, so I was flying fairly low, stay out of the wind. And as I'm turning out across Lake Michigan, air traffic control told me I had one airplane in front of me going the same way, an Aztec. And so as the shoreline disappeared behind me, there wasn't a lot of visibility, about 4 miles. I watched the shoreline disappear behind me as I'm crossing Lake Michigan toward Milwaukee. And I see this light out in front of me. I thought, that's interesting. I see the Aztec. This is supposed to be farther than that in front of me. And the light starts getting bigger. And I'm watching it and thinking, oh, my gosh, an Aztec must have turned back for some reason. And he's heading right at me. And he comes screaming at me and probably doing 1,000 miles an hour. And abruptly stops beside me. I've done a fair amount of formation flying, and you don't form up coming straight at somebody, you know, with that kind of differential velocity. You know, you gradually closed in, usually from the side's a nice way to do it, straight in from the front and parked off my wing. And if it was a side, I don't know what size it was, this size, but it's about the size of a DC-6 from one end to the other. It was probably 75 feet off my right wing, and it's dark. And it's like 12 o'clock at night. And it's kind of a big thrill. It's shaped like a classic UFO you see pictures of, with a dome-like hump in the center. I kind of got used to it being there, and I thought, well, okay, now let's see how maneuverable this thing is, and I'm not too happy with getting that close to me. So I did a full control aileron roll to the left to about a 45-degree bank, and then put some Gs on and started to try to pull away, and it bobbled just a little bit, stayed right off my way in the same approximate distance. So I rolled out, and now I'm going close to south, and sat there for a few minutes looking at it. I thought, this is a great range. And it's pitch dark out over the lake. There's not much visibility at night. There's an overcast above me about 4,500 feet. I mean, the only lights are the lights in my cockpit and this thing sitting beside me. So get a little more comfortable. I thought, well, I'll turn toward it, see if I can get closer. And did a real hard turn toward it, and it just like it was locked onto me. And so I rolled out in a heading that would take me toward Milwaukee. And I'm sitting there observing this thing. And it's really the spookiest part about it was, I'm probably somewhere near mid-lake, I'm looking at it, trying to figure out what on earth this thing is. Didn't think it was on earth. And I see something that looks like a shape beginning to appear in the side of it, the side close to me. And something that looked like a biped rode up to the side of this and it's peering out at me. I don't know what it was. It was just a shape. I didn't have any detail about that, but it was obviously something was on board to move around. And as we start getting close to Milwaukee...
Jack, unfortunately... Jackie, we gotta leave it there. Unfortunately, we are sadly out of time. I like where this story was heading, but unfortunately, we won't get to the end of it. Preston, thanks for hanging out. UFOs at the Drive-In Theater, available at Amazon, I'm guessing, and wherever fine books are sold. Preston, thank you for this.
Hey, a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Okay. Well, that's it for me. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galante, Michael Cozio, Donna Walker, Melissa Rodriguez, Sean Latisor, and Chris Burrows, I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. Merry Christmas, Kalakristulina, Happy New Year. Talk to you in 2021. Good night.